Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. My name is Ben Foost. I will be your host for this evening. Yeah, look, I don't even have anybody around to do any type of, like, I don't know, alternative commentary. Like, that's all we have going on is that opening and me. Hey, so it is kind of an interesting night here on Live from the Path. It is just me hanging out. This is my name's Ben. You'll be familiar with me. I'm usually the guy that opens the show, and usually there's like a gang of cats hanging around with me, but through some circumstances or another, sounds like a bad burrito, heavy work schedule, some class stuff, and I don't know, my willingness to drive out here. It's just me and you hanging out today, so we'll see how that goes. So there's just been a couple things on my mind, and I don't know, you'll have to tell me whether this is worth listening to for, 45 minutes or so, but just a couple things I was kind of thinking about during the day today that I thought maybe you'd be interested in. So, first of all, I don't know if you guys, have you ever heard of the musician Derek Webb? He's kind of an interesting dude. I first came across his tunes, I want to say maybe 4 or 5 years ago, just listening to some online lectures, and one of his songs came up. And he was a fairly popular, like, I hadn't heard him before then, but apparently he was a fairly popular dude. He had married a girl named Sandra McCracken, who I actually just saw. All Sons and Daughters was in town, had been at a concert I think it was a week or two ago, and we got involved in it. Somebody we knew, Chris Akers, as a matter of fact, who's been on the show, said that they could use some help taking tickets and helping load the band in and set them up and stuff, and so we kind of volunteered for that. Me, Mike, and Guessman went out there, and so that was kind of a cool experience, but like, I was excited to see both of them, but Sandra McCracken I was really excited about. She just released a new album called God's Highway, which I like. The one just before that, though, was a Psalms album. And the production really isn't up my alley. Like, I'm a bit more of a, she's a singer-songwriter, but the vibe of the album wasn't necessarily that. But I really did like the album. And, so anyway, I was excited to see her. And I, like I said, I'd heard a little bit about her having been married to Derek Webb. And the reason all that is kind of relevant is he had posted something earlier this year that I remember reading at the time and I thought was just very honest, very powerful, and very appropriate, I think, for fellas to know just how few steps we probably are away to destroying a lot of things. That sounds overly dire. But, so they had been married for like 13 years. I think they had a couple children. And we're a bit of a power couple, I think, in the Christian music industry. And I'm speaking all this off things I've read, because like I said, I just wasn't kind of ingrained in the Christian music industry at the time. So I can't speak all that well to it. But anyway, he ends up, it sounds like he ends up cheating on her in some way or another. And they end up getting a divorce after 13 years of marriage. And it's like, it was a very difficult thing, I think, for people to digest. You had kind of had these two people who were, passionate about Jesus. They were, people that you could look up to. They were very original in the way that their songwriting and the beautiful voices, beautiful songs, and so anyway, I tell you all that background though to kind of help digest a little bit of this blog post, and let me just read it to you, and then maybe we'll see if you guys have any reactions to it. But it happened in January of 2016. They'd put out a statement about their divorce and hadn't really said much. They said, "Look, it's just a sad thing, and we've decided to divorce, and we asked for privacy." And then as part of that announcement, though, they said, "Derek, although that we're both sinners, Derek has accepted responsibility, for leading to this decision." So it was kind of clear that he was otherwise the catalyst to this, but it hadn't been overtly clear as to what exactly had happened. Okay, so maybe that's some decent background for you. But anyway, the title of the blog post was On Failure, Liturgy, and New Year's. This is from Derek Webb from January of this year. It says, I have thought for a long time about how, when, and honestly, if I would write this. But with some time and healing behind me and the start of a new year, I felt that it was time. As I'm sure you know by now, my wife and I divorced a little over a year ago. At the time, we put a lot of thought into what we considered an appropriately benign and simple statement, which we released together announcing this sad news. A very good and wise friend, someone who has also gone through some hard things publicly, gave what I considered valuable counsel. While your instinct and people's expectation might be to go into a lot of detail in what you share publicly about a situation like this, it's very rarely a good idea. But with some perspective and much personal health and growth over the past year, it now feels incongruent to leave the subject unaddressed publicly. I can imagine that many of you felt and maybe still feel confused, disappointed, angry even, at hearing the news of our split. There was an understanding, a trust, broken between you and me. I've heard it said that that trust takes years to build and seconds to break. My hope is that this writing might be the first step towards rebuilding that trust. In the brief statement that was released about our divorce, it said that I took full responsibility for the events that led to the decision. That is true, but I want to take this opportunity to say more. The truth is, I cheated. I betrayed the trust of my wife. I betrayed the trust of my family, my friends, and my community. And I betrayed the trust and support that many of you have entrusted me with for many, many years. What started as a brief, inappropriate, and quickly confessed connection with a very old friend evolved quickly into something more serious, which was hidden from spouses and friends. It continued in secret for a matter of months, was eventually discovered, and set into motion the consequences that I will now live with for the rest of my life. Or, more simply said, I was a fool. I believed lies, which led me to tell lies. This is why temptation is so tempting. It's insane how quickly it becomes rational and reasonable to believe and to do destructive and evil things. As much as I wish I could, I simply cannot change what I've done, nor the resulting consequences. I can only own these despicable actions, which have left me completely devastated and deeply ashamed. Sometimes, no matter how bad you want it or how hard you fight for it, broken things just can't be mended. The only path forward from here is to continue focusing on health and healing, my children and parents, and investing in safe community. That brings me to one of the most important things I can emphasize. Through what's easily been the hardest few years of my life, many friends left, a precious few stayed, and some new friends showed up for which I am so grateful, and without whom I might not have survived. For most of my life, and certainly as these events transpired, I have been dramatically under-resourced with people around me with whom I have been truly vulnerable, who really knew me. The importance of having a handful, even just one or two safe people in your life with whom you can and do truly share everything, especially the hardest and most shameful things, cannot be overstated. I see this as one of the most important and life-altering changes that the devastation has brought about in my life. Although it took time, I found a wise therapist, several groups of men with whom I spend regular time, and a handful of friends who I consider to be among the best I've ever had. I would plead with you to find a small group of safe men or women, friends who will not respond with platitudes of morality but will instead get down and not only join you but stay with you in your shit, in hopes of helping pull you out. Inevitably, they'll need you to join them in there someday. You might be a man or woman reading this even now, finding yourself exactly where I was 2 years ago, seriously considering choices that could destroy your life, your family, and maybe yourself. If that's you, please listen to me. What you think you want, what you think you can have is not real, and you'll lose real things pursuing it. As an unfortunately and extremely reliable source, please believe me. So if you're standing on that steep ledge, stop. Don't do it. At very least, risk telling someone immediately and give opportunity to hear some understanding and perspective. Maybe some sanity, restoring words that might be the small disruption needed to shake you awake. Tell the whole truth and keep telling it. Your marriage is worth it. Your future is worth it. The tone and spirit of the songs I've written over the last decade or so have sometimes been called prophetic, a term that I've worn with extreme discomfort. But it turns out my songs have been eerily prophetic. In my own story, for years I've borrowed this language from Ezekiel. I am a whore, I do confess, but I put you on like a wedding dress, and I run down the aisle. Hard as they have always been to sing, I am especially grateful to have those words to confess today, as I've never known them to be more deeply true of myself as I am running down that aisle still. There's always been some measure of distance between me and the content of my songs. There's a sense in which even the most confessional of my songs, like Wedding Dress, or its more recent Sibling Heavy, felt like they were about someone else. So, the accidentally prophetic sting of those songs is especially acute and painful in light of my great failures. Songs like those have never been more difficult to sing, but I've never been more grateful to have to. I've said recently that my songs feel like my personal liturgy, things that I don't necessarily or always believe, but I show up to recite again and again in hopes of believing them. If I'm honest, most of the time I don't believe the words in my songs. I have a hard time believing in a God that could make, let alone love a man, who could do such things. So I'll go on reciting and adding to my liturgy in hopes of believing the words, because I wish to. More than ever, I wish to. So let me give you a chance here, just in case you're unfamiliar with some of his music, let me just play a little bit of a tune for you. And then I want to talk about the content. There's just a lot in there that I really, really liked. I don't know, probably not an overly positive way, not like Facebook-like style, but they're good things to remember. They're very interesting things to ponder, and I think they're probably more applicable to most of our lives than we probably want to readily admit. So anyway, this song is one of my favorites of his. It's the first one I heard from him. It's called Rich Young Ruler. Just listen to a little bit of this, and then I'll hop right back in with you. The strong reasons that I don't know, I connect with that song because it sounded, that chorus especially sounded right, and like he obviously was talking about it in the terms of financial things, the things that we didn't want to give up, that were the very things that kind of rooted it out and made it so that we were actually, I don't know, giving up our lives, right? That we were losing our lives to gain it. And I don't know. It was that song just grabbed me. I liked it anyway, but I think there was the underlying theological girding, I guess, was pretty strong for me. And so, like, I think that's kind of what drew me to that guy. There was very honest kind of longing in the songs. I'll tell you this. He's got a lot of tunes out there. Mockingbird was his kind of most popular album. And he's done, like, a number of iterations of that album where it's kind of been released again with some remixes and stuff like that. There's an acoustic... there's an all-acoustic album that is difficult to find. Like, you can't get it from any of the streaming sites, but you can find it out on Amazon from, like, third-party sellers, and they'll sell you the disc. You can't get it in digital format. But that one is my absolute favorite. Like, that, of all the albums I've kind of listened to, that's the one I bought. And it's just kind of him and an acoustic guitar doing a lot of the songs that are from the Mockingbird album. But that one was on there, and I actually like the acoustic version a little bit better. I wore that one out. Which was still possible with the CD. So, anyway, I just want to give you a taste of that. So you had some sort of connection with the guy. As now we kind of go back and think about some of the stuff that he wrote here. So, I thought it was interesting where he was talking about, kind of the wise counsel, right? Like, he talked about kind of betraying his wife. And then when he started talking about temptation and hiding things, and let me read this to you again. This is why temptation is so tempting. It's insane how quickly it becomes rational and reasonable to believe and do destructive and evil things. As much as I wish I could, I simply cannot change what I've done nor the resulting consequences. I can only own these despicable actions, which have left me completely devastated and deeply ashamed. Sometimes, no matter how bad you want it or how hard you fight for it, broken things just can't be mended. And there's a couple things in there that really struck me. And the first one is that, like, he says it's insane how quickly it becomes rational and reasonable to believe and do destructive and evil things. And I guess what I had in my mind is that I feel that. Like, I feel that personally. I wonder if that's true for a lot of us. Maybe it's just me, I guess. But, like my stability in life, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. Trajectory, I guess. Protected path of following Jesus and, keeping in right relationship with God, right relationship with my wife, trying to hold all those things in the right balance, to pursue them with the right, passion and stay on the course, It's a very delicate thing. I've known wise people who love Jesus who can believe lies, who can be easily taken in to believe things that aren't true. And he gets to that later. That's also, I thought, was a very poignant part there. And I'll read that again here in a second. But, like, I started thinking about my own life. And, like, I've not been in a position like that. I'd like to think it's because I don't put myself in those positions, but I mean, it's possible that I just have never been faced with a legitimate and real tangible temptation in that area, I guess. And that goes for a lot of things, I suppose. But, like, I was just thinking, I don't know that I actually trust myself. I don't know that I could say with 100% certainty that if you provided the right circumstances that I would willingly believe a lie. And be suckered into believing something about myself or something about a relationship or a situation or something. And then maybe it's not so bad or whatever it is. You know, like, I think that is a realization that I'm grateful to be reminded of at times, I guess, is that I'm just as susceptible as every fool out there. As every person who said, this type of thing doesn't happen to me, I won't get caught up in this, I won't believe this lie or that lie or taken in by this circumstance, or this isn't the situation that I thought it was going to be, or like, you know, this isn't how this thing starts, this is innocent, this is whatever it is, I guess. You know, everyone's got a moment where they're like, I was blind, and then you're, and then you're dead, right? Like, you get caught up in something, and then you have no idea, until it's stamping you into the ground. And I wonder if that's probably, I don't know, every time that I've known that I've been kind of an open defiance to something where I just know there's no joy in there, that I'm taking a short, easy way out that serves me in one way or another. And it's counter to what God has. I've known it most of the time. Most of the time I've known it. I had no idea. I don't know. Maybe I don't buy that, I guess. Maybe I don't buy that. And it's probably true that I think about it. Anytime I've made decisions like that, I've purposely put myself in those circumstances. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I don't think we're falling into these types of things. I think we just had to believe a series of lies. And frankly, we probably knew they were lies at the times to get to some of these places, to put ourselves in those types of circumstances and say, maybe this is all right. And you know, there's a shifting worldly standard that some people can accept certain circumstances, and maybe that's not for you. Maybe you can't handle that stuff, and so you got to stay out of it. But it does still seem though that we probably need to be reminded of how fragile these things are. Like some of the relationship problems that people have in their marriages, like I just don't have, like I've never had, and I'd like to think those things. I think it's, you know, part of it is we have my wife and I have a God centered marriage, like honoring to God, honoring to each other. This is one thing that I've told many people is that, like, if you're asking for marriage help or counseling or whatever, like, I can't help you unless you otherwise agree on Jesus, because that is our arbiter. That's how we solve problems, is kind of submission to what joy and goodness is in that connection, in that relationship. And because we agree on Jesus, that authority otherwise allows us to change in the ways that we should. And so, you know, I'd like to think that that's the reason that I don't have some of these problems in my marriage, but like, you know, the truth is there probably has been much risk there too. And again, maybe that's intentional as well. I don't know. You know, he touches on some of that stuff in the article. I guess the broad point though, or the broad thing I'm thinking of is that, it's probably worth continually examining. I mean, diligently examining, is don't be fooled. Don't be blind to think that you can't be suckered into something. How many times have we seen it, right? Like, you've seen the most powerful people in the world do something so freaking stupid that, like, they, and it's a lot of it times it's with their willy, but like, whatever it is, you have people who have, you know, the most, handsome or beautiful spouse. They have a ton of money. They can do whatever they want. And ultimately, like, you think there'd be a way, that there would be an enough that you wouldn't otherwise be dragged into something so freaking dumb. But like, it happens over and over and over again, whether it's, you know, it's politicians or it's, you know, rich folk or actors and actresses. And here's the deal, is like, they're just more noticeable. My point is that of all the things that we think we would be satiated by or satisfied with, that doesn't actually seem to be enough. And they end up getting drug into something beyond that, and get themselves into some bad circumstances. And like, that had just as susceptible to that are people who don't have those privileges. But I guess the thing, there's not a level of protection here. Like, there's any level that we will believe a lie and get kind of suckered into something. So he's like, when he said, you might be a man or woman, let's see. Where was it? He was talking about safe people in his life. Well, maybe it doesn't matter. He said, I simply said I was a fool. I believed lies, which led me to telling lies. Like, I believed things. He said, oh yeah, here we go. If that's you, so he said, you might be a man or woman reading this even now, finding yourself exactly where I was 2 years ago, seriously considering choices that could destroy your life, your family, and maybe yourself. If that's you, please listen to me. What you think you want, what you think you can have, is not real. You'll lose real things pursuing it. As an unfortunately and extremely reliable source, please believe me. And I mean, I suppose there's a perception there that says something is better than what I have, and that's the base nature of the lie right there, right? God wants something different for my life, so he's providing me an out that is not on the other side of my problems. And like, his thing's the fidelity thing, and there's probably some relevance to that to most people, but like, it could be anything, right? Like, anytime that you're taking a cheap out, you're thinking short term about something that is a long term slog. That is joy is in the perseverance, and knowing real, true, honest things, as opposed to chasing lies and looking for short term satisfaction in them. And like I said, I think that's a risk in everybody's life. You look around, and maybe it's a pursuit of money, maybe it's a pursuit of a different relationship or whatever. Like sometimes we want an easy answer to something. We want to not have to go through the hard work of saying, you know what, I freaking hurt somebody in my marriage, or this person is terrible to me. Like they didn't start out that way, but they treat me like crap. And like there's a way to work through that. There almost always is if you have two willing participants at somewhere else or another. It just may take a long, long time. And we get sick of the fight and we get lazy about things and kind of bail on them. And so one of the things he did talk about, said, I would plead with you to find a small group of safe men or women, friends who will not respond with platitudes of morality, but will instead get down and not only join you, but stay with you in your shit in hopes of helping pull you out. Inevitably, they'll need you to join them in theirs someday. I forgot that was in there. You know, I think that's important because that a good community helps you write your reality. As a matter of fact, I can say personally that any time that I was trying to pursue something that I knew was wrong, that's the same thing that I'm not going to openly discuss in front of this group of people. Generally, the dudes that are generally in this room with me, is because they would set it straight, right? Like you don't say things to those guys because you want to set it straight. So like. It's also when I can tell, like I've had circumstances where there's guys that I would normally talk to and then suddenly I'm not talking to as much or they're not sharing the same types of things or they're kind of backing away on stuff. And like the reality is that, they're purposely hiding something and it's generally they've not done something that they shouldn't have, but they're two steps back from it and they don't want to get caught, because they want to go through with it. Like that's the nature of temptation and sin, is that it's something you actually want to do. And so you start plotting and lying and covering things up and it's just a pain in the ass to have to try to hunt all that stuff down. And, yeah, that is what happens with you start kind of dodging community and you don't want to be held up to that standard. And like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, you know, whoever's listening here, I don't know what your relationship is with Jesus, but like, we read things like this, or maybe we see things like this, and our relationship with God's kind of the same way, as we feel like it's a bat, like someone's kind of terrorizing you, got your friends coming after you all the time, accusing you of stuff. But here's the thing is that like, in my right mind, I put those things on intentionally. In my right mind, I'm recruiting guys saying, look, I want the best thing. Why would I be such a fool as to not want the best thing? And if the best thing is what God has kind of laid out for life, if he's the creator, if he knows you, he knows what's right and wrong, he knows what brings joy, he knows what brings sadness and pain, and he says, look, these are the things of joy. You're persevering, you're honoring people, you're submitting, you're serving. Like, in your relationships, that's what it is. You know what? In your wealth, I want you to give. I care more about what you give than what you take in. I want generosity. I want people like taking care of other people. Like that's what joy brings. And I look at it and I say, you know what? If I believe God is who he says he is and that these things are true, then I will do whatever I need to do to put things in place to make sure I stick with them. Because only a fool would fight that type of thing. And so when I start to go off the rails and start walking around towards something that isn't beneficial to me, my marriage, my walk with Jesus, my friends, my community, my giving, whatever it is, like, the right thing to have done is put people in place that would stop me. And so, like, we look at it as a shackle or a handcuff that says, hey man, I don't want people telling me what to do. And the thing is, I sure as hell do if they're telling me the right thing to do. Right? If I, in my right mind, when I'm otherwise not being dominated by one sin or another that's trying to drag me into making a fool out of myself, if I put the right things in place so that my brother can call me and say, dude, I saw that. I saw you, you know, posting something on Facebook or, what you're talking about doesn't make any sense. Or like I heard you tell your wife that you were going to be somewhere and you were somewhere else. Like I put those things rightly in place because I actually truly want joy and I want other people to fight for it. If I'm in the position that I think where I'm kind of bailing on it, like those are the right things to put in place. So that's not a shackle. That's a support system. Like that's a community that's coming to your rescue in a way that you would have wanted to. Like it doesn't make any sense. But here's the thing. You can't make right decisions like that when you're in the middle of it. When you're in the middle of it, you're going to act like a fool. That's what he was getting at. I was a fool. I believed lies. And the thing is that like, if you start rejecting things that otherwise point those lies out to you, like you're plotting to get away with it. You start separating yourself from scripture. You start separating yourself from community. Start telling lies to the people around you. Start hiding stuff. Here's the deal. Anytime there's a notion of trying to hide something, regardless of whether the thing you're hiding has any consequence to somebody else, there's some sort of evil sitting inside your heart that's trying to keep you away from something. Okay, that's the truth of it, right? Like, we just don't understand this, especially in our culture. Like, we get caught up in kind of formalities or not wanting to hurt people's feelings and that kind of thing. And like, even white lies are really dangerous. And I'm I struggle with this because I tell a lot of lies to the children that I think are, they're like jokes. And sometimes, most of the time they know the difference. Sometimes they, maybe they don't. And my wife's been kind of after me about that. And the truth, she's probably right. Like, anything that even sniffs of dishonesty is a risk for you. It's a risk for me. And I suppose it takes us down the, a trajectory that we, I don't know. It just puts us in a lot of trouble. Anytime you find yourself plotting to hide something, that's a serious risk. So like, what does it look like if we can just live our lives in complete and honest freedom? We just say true things, and we say true things all the time, and we don't guard things. And like, I mean, it doesn't mean you're not nice. It doesn't mean you're not careful with, you know, that your words aren't unnecessarily hurting people. What I'm saying is that, like, when it comes to your behavior, when it comes to things that you're thinking about, when it comes to things that are weighing on you, right? Like, you wake up and you've, you find that you've been kind of focusing on someone more than you should have. If you find that, you know, you've been thinking, you know, how can I stash this little money around somewhere to do something? Ultimately, my wife won't notice the difference on the money, or my, you know, it's all right if I step out and have lunch with this person, whatever it is. Like, just say things out in the open. You don't want trouble, then don't find it. Like, you want to live in freedom, then do so. Right? You're going to do something, then say everything out loud. Hey, I'm going to go have lunch with this person today. Say it out to your wife 2 hours beforehand, so if she comes back and says you ain't going, you ain't going. Okay? It's the wrong thing to do. Say it somewhere in your community. Like, find dudes that you trust, whatever it is. Like, that's where freedom lives, man. Like, we're dishonest. We're dishonest in the things that we actually want. Like, we say, hey, look, I want to live in freedom. I want to have a good marriage. I want to have the joy of the Lord. I want to have, like, all these things a part of our lives. And then anytime we purposely put things in place, like, that allow us to hide things or allow us to not live in complete honesty, and I mean bold, flagrant honesty, we're being dishonest about what we actually want. And that's probably the hard part. Like, that's the thing that's constantly tugging at us, is saying, you know, I want this short-term thing, and we have no perspective of what the long-term joy in something is. And so we fight for the short-term thing. And if we had the chance to kind of macro level step back, we would say, yeah, I definitely want the long-term thing. But like, it's tough to fight, I guess, against those short-term temptations that otherwise drag us away from what we actually want. I can tell you this, like, it makes me think of every time that I felt distance from God. Almost every time, the very next time I went to scripture and I thought, I need to read something. And I started to read. I thought, like, my heart just filled with joy. And I thought, I missed Jesus. I missed the peace that comes with reading about God and his character and his grace and his mercy and that kind of thing. Like, it just, it reoriented me. It put me back to where I needed to thinking right things, thinking true things. There was something a guy said in an article this week. We probably won't get to it tonight. But like, it was one of the things we have to recognize about our faith is that our faith isn't just like a moral principles. Like, it speaks truth. It defines truth and then calls us to adhere to it. And sometimes I need to be reminded about true, like, what is true? Like, what are the true things in the world? What are the things that I believe that I shouldn't believe? And what are the things that are getting me off course? And the truth is, if I go back and I dip into scripture and I be reminded of what true things are, what is truth? Where does it come from? Who speaks true things? And like, what am I thinking? Where is that not aligned with that? I have something very, very gracious to submit to that can otherwise reorient my path. And you know, one of the things that's been sitting on me, probably the last 3 years, is listen to people, who love Jesus, who claim to, I don't know how to put that, who claim to love Jesus, we'll put it that way, who would say that they love Jesus Christ, and then shift their thoughts, or opinions can change over time on one social issue or another, and as they watch those things evolve, like somehow they've separated true things that Jesus has said from true things, or things they claim to be true in the here and now. And I guess that's the thing. It's like a lot of times it comes from some measure of sympathy, right? Like, we want to look at a group of people and we want to say, look, these people are being mistreated. Or if we were more loving in these circumstances, like the position that you're taking that we say is biblical is harsh or is cruel or is mistreating a group of people or whatever, okay? That's generally what's being lodged against it. And it's on the foundation that Jesus loves people, we should otherwise change how we react to this particular circumstance, okay? And the thing is that, like, almost every time what they've done, though, is you've taken something, I've taken true things from the Bible and I've thrown them out in order to agree with other true things from the Bible. And so as opposed to saying, hey, this is all true, how do both of these things work together? How can I say Jesus loves these people and he says you can't keep acting like this? This is not good for you. This is not what I created for you. This is not where joy is. No, this is not right. This is not right behavior. This is not a right way to think. And if Jesus has said true things about that, like, how do we, I just don't understand how people aren't recognizing the level of dishonesty here. Because here's the things, I'm likely to get pulled in whatever liberal sob fest is going on. Despite my, predilections to the contrary, like, I love people. I want to mourn with mourning people. I hate the thought of people being mistreated, especially coming out of the church who are supposed to exemplify who Jesus Christ is. And we've taken people whose very lifestyle or frame of mind or thought processes or behavior are like dead ringers for us to know that they really need Jesus Christ. And what we did was beat them up for a while. And like, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing because it doesn't smell like Jesus at all. But here's the thing. I'm likely to sympathize with that type of thing, and that is my reaction to people. But because I love them, why on earth would I lie to them? Why on earth would I take such a gracious gift of truth that Jesus has given us and then just withhold it from somebody to try to account for the lies that we've otherwise told them on the opposite side of the problem? It's stupid. Like, it's foolishness, and I don't understand, like, I don't understand how we got there. I don't know how we got into this position. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just easier. Maybe it feels like it's easier to treat people that way or to try to make amends for past mistakes. But it's not consistent with someone who says, I want to love and follow Jesus and I love people. Because if I want to love and follow Jesus and I agree who he is, then the stuff that he says is true and that the Spirit is otherwise inspired is true. And like, I don't know how a rational person would bail on true things. And then how can I look someone in the eye and say, look, I love you and I care about you and I'm sorry for the wrong that's been done to you, and intentionally withhold from them true and gracious things that the Lord has given? I don't understand it. And like, I guess I get where people are coming from. Like, they're fighting for a perspective of blindness. Something that the church has done in, like, poorly in the past. I guess I struggle with how, like, personally, how they got to that point. Hey, Nick Harris. Hey, man, hop on the deal. Nick, hey, man, good thing. Nick Harris, I've been blathering on for a long time, and it's not good for anybody. Go ahead and tap on that mic for a second, will you?
Everybody doing?
Okay, there we go. There's Nick Harris right there. Okay. Good.
It's good to see you, man.
Hey, good to see you, too. Hey, man, me and Nick haven't been able to hook up for a while. It is good to see you.
Yeah, I've been working two jobs lately.
Hey, man, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
How's it going?
Tiring, but...
Scoot on up to the microphone so the folks
okay,
can hear.
Okay, yeah, tiring, but, you know, God's work got to get done some way.
That is right on. that is the cure to the evil ills of society, right? God's work got to get done one way or another.
Yes, sir.
That's true. So I couldn't honestly tell you what I've been talking about for the last 45 minutes. You see, nobody else came to the show tonight.
Yeah, I know I was kind of late, and I'm sorry, everybody. You know, I'm late.
That's all right. So... now remember, I was off on like 10 different tangents here. So I was reading, are you familiar with a guy named Derek Webb? He's a singer-songwriter?
No.
Okay, that's all right. So the story, what I was reading about was he had been married. He was a fairly popular guy.
Okay.
Had married another popular singer-songwriter named Sandra McCracken. Okay. They were married for like 13 years, both Christian artists.
Okay.
And then they got divorced. Mm. And he was, he wrote... a blog post kind of describing his divorce, and it was on him, and he said so. He said, this was on me. I cheated on my wife.
Okay.
And one of the things, the thing I was talking about was how easy it is, it seems, to believe lies, right?
Right.
Like I want to look at a guy like that and say, oh, I could never do that. I would never cheat on my wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like his description kind of says, look, I believe lies. Things happen real quickly, and then all of a sudden you kind of find yourself where you're hiding things from people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hiding relationships from folks. And I guess what I thought was, as I was driving in, is that, I think everybody's susceptible to that. Like,
okay.
We're probably foolish to look at the world and say, hey, you know, those things couldn't happen to me.
Yeah.
you know, I'd like to think that, I would never do that. I would never cheat on my wife. But here's the thing, like, I could probably think of dark moments where my mind has gone places, not in that particular area, but like, I've recognized in my own mind places where I'm like, why am I even thinking that? I don't think that about this person or about the world or about Jesus or whatever.
Right.
And like, there's some shadow in my mind, you know?
Yeah.
And so, so I think it probably is a risk that all of us run, and that it's probably something that we need to be very, very careful with and careful to protect. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
I mean, does that sound true to you? Do you think sometimes we get overconfident and say, hey, look, I'm not susceptible to that sin, and that's probably a big risk for us, right?
But that's why you got to always keep God, you know, in every aspect of your life, because, you know, you got to constantly communicate with him. That's what make it, you know, it's beneficial for you to do that, because, like, any moment of the day you can slip, you know, like, just like that. You can be on point with it from morning to the afternoon and something happening, you know, like, your thoughts will change up. That's why God say, you know, control your thoughts or whatnot. Like, you can't control what come in, but you can control what you continue to live in your mind, you know, so.
No, that's true. It's actually, we're just reading through Philippians 4, and it talks about, you know, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, you know, whatever is true, that kind of thing. You know, think on those things. Like, what are you putting into your mind and allowing to soak in there? And it's kind of a hard deal because, like, a lot of, especially the society that we're in, there's a lot of nasty stuff that can kind of soak in there. And the truth is that, like, sometimes we dismiss how that can influence our lives, but it's something Paul was concerned about. Yeah. He obviously said, look, this is a risk, man. You got to make sure that if you're going to think about something, make sure it's a true thing. Make sure it's an honorable thing, a just thing.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I guess, we got to be careful about that kind of thing. And, you know, you brought up a good point, which is we were talking a little bit about, I say we, like, you know, I was talking.
But I was here with you in spirit, bro. I was.
So, a little bit about the importance of having community around you, right? Like, it's harder to hide things. Like, if you're open and honest with people and you're willing to have guys around you that can call you on your stuff and say, look, what you're like, this has happened. Like, I've seen guys that I know that'll post something on Facebook. I'm like, something ain't right about this. Something's going on with that dude.
Like, when you see things like that, like, you know, like you said, we already had this conversation before. I remember, like, one morning and we was talking about spiritual attacks. Mm-hmm. Like, one thing I think it's important as a Christian to know those symptoms. Like, when you are under attack, sometimes we don't. Like, we just think, like, it's a thought that comes through our head, but really we under a spiritual attack, and, you know, you have to talk to your brothers. It's all about, like you said, building fences and having that circle around that'll comfort you and, you know, uplift you when you're going through some things. Because, you know, like, that's the whole reason why God said, love your brother, you know, like, to be there for him, so.
Yeah. So we talked about a little bit about the importance of community there, but, like, one of the things that you said, was gravely omitted here, which is constant communication with God, right? Like, if you're praying, if you're otherwise interacting with Jesus, I kind of, like, what I have in my mind is this thought of, like, just never letting go of the cloak of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I mean, and even, even when I feel like I am just in the dirt about something, and like, I know I did the wrong thing or thought the wrong thing. I did it on purpose.
Yeah.
It occurred to me to not do it. I said, hey, this is not helpful and just and good, but I'm going to think on it anyway. You know, or I'm going to do this anyway. I'm going to say it anyway. Yeah. And that rebellion in your life. And I thought, oh, that's like, I just spit in God's face with this. Like, I did. I've noticed that. There's been a shift in my life for the last 5 years. I don't do anything. I said this a little bit at the start of the show. I don't do anything unintentionally.
Right.
I don't find myself be like, oh, I accidentally sinned here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. That is not how it's happening. Like, a lot, like, how often it happens is cut way down. But if I'm doing it, it's because the Holy Spirit is kicking and dragging me to try to not do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what's going on. Which is how every time I come back and something has occurred one way or the other, and I think, I don't need to say, God, I need you to be with me and help me not to do this, because he was.
Yeah.
He was. I can recall it. Ben, don't do that. You don't do that. Don't be thinking on that.
That's the thing, though, bro. Like, that's what separate everything what man know and everything that God know. Like, your conscience is everything. Like, your conscience will bear witness to everything that you do, everything that you think.
Yeah.
How do you know, like, how do you think that God know what you're doing every second of the day. It's your conscious, basically. Because it's like your conscious just have all these thoughts or whatever. And, you know, your conscious is not connected to your brain. So it's like, for one, like a lot of people got to understand that, like, your conscious and your brain is two completely systems, basically. So it's like the way they work, your conscious is how God keeps up with you, you know. So it's like you can't lie about your conscious to God, you know, like you can try to hide your feelings, but God knows exactly what's going on with your conscious. You know, so.
And I think that's kind of the point here. I got some questions about your biology, Nick Harris, but let's focus back on the talking to, so if you're talking to God all the time, though.
Yeah.
It puts you in a position where, it's not that you're not susceptible to those types of things. It's just that, like, you're just honest with him. Like, as soon as that thing shows up and say, Jesus, you saw that, right? Cause I saw that.
Yeah.
I need that to go. I need that to go. And the thing is like, you can either try to fight that on your own, but when you're open with Jesus and you're open with your community around you, and frankly, you're open with whoever you're plotting to sin against at any given time, like, that's actually the right fence. That's the right protection, is to just be on out with it.
Yeah.
Just be on out with it and live with some integrity. And then, like, chips, stuff's going to fall where they may. Like, anytime we think we're going to protect something by keeping it in, or by not sharing it, or by thinking that we can hide it, like, that's foolish. Like, we serve an all, like, a creator God who knows everything. Like, let's stop acting so foolish in what we know about Jesus, all right?
Yeah.
And so, that's true, is that sometimes we, that's one of the things, perhaps, that we struggle with in our prayer life, is like, hey, what am I telling this stuff to God for? He already knows it. Here's the thing, is like, you don't stop talking to God. You're praying in, without ceasing, it keeps you out of a lot of problems.
Yeah.
It just keeps you out with, you just don't have the same problems as someone who's like, oh, hey, maybe I'm not going to pray. And here's the deal, guys. I've been there. I've been at the end of a situation where I know I chose the wrong thing. I chose me. I could have chosen God or chose me, and I chose me, and I knew it.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I'm like, I don't want to talk to Jesus right now.
But think about it, though. Like, when you go through those times, that's when Jesus is there the most. Like, you just got to sometimes sit back, you know, be slow to anger, slow to speak, and quick to listen. Meaning, like, listen to what God got, what he's trying to download in your mind at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, basically, like, you know, like, when you be going through those things, like, it be hard. So it's like, you don't really want to irritate anybody else, because you're on the edge already. So it's like, you gotta move a certain way and be silent, and people would be like, man, you acting kind of weird, you know, like, keep going about your day like that, but just listen for God, you know, listen for the sign, well, watch for the signs and listen to God as he's trying to give you the insight that you need to know at that moment.
Well, I think that the truth of it is that at the times where I don't even want to turn my face to God because I'm ashamed of myself, I'm ashamed of whatever it is I've done or thought or said or whatever, like it is in that moment that your hand needs to extend and grab onto the robe.
Yeah.
I mean, hold on to the cloak of Jesus. Cause, and here's the reason I say that is part of the post from our friend, Mr. Webb over here, is he was kind of talking about being ashamed. And I've followed him a little bit, and, he struggled with staying in the church, and I think a relationship with Jesus. And the thing is that, like, he said, I don't. The very last part of the blog post here, I'll read this again.
Okay.
Was I've said recently that my songs feel like my personal liturgy, things that I don't necessarily or always believe, but I show up to recite again and again in hopes of believing them. If I'm honest, most of the time I don't believe the words in my songs. I have a hard time believing in a God that could make, let alone love, a man who could do such things.
So that's just like the devil, he'll trick you, you know, because like God loves the guilty. Like if you actually read it, like he'll tell you, like, he loved the guilty. So it's like if you do something and you feel guilty, that's when he extends his hand to you, you know. So that's really the time to catch your blessing, basically, you know, so.
I mean, he said he came to heal the sick, right?
Yeah.
So, like, identifying rightly as sick, but here's the thing, it's like, I do get where he's coming from, because the truth is that, like, this, the sense of shame and separation from God, first of all, it's the right understanding of sin, but it does, it's such a weird circumstance because it to a certain extent captures a love for God that says
you heard him.
I've heard him, right?
You like, feel bad. Right, you feel bad about hurting him. But see, that's what's good about that situation, because through you feeling hurt about him, the more you want to be like Jesus, it's like you be like, hold on, I just embarrassed myself and I disappointed the Father, so I got to do better. Yeah. So that's when, at that moment, that's when you transform into what you was supposed to do. You know, like basically you enhance yourself, like you get back on the right track, or even better.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, the more guilty you feel and more sane, it's like, I do the same thing. Some days I want to pull an Adam and hide behind the bus or something. Yeah, you right. know, like, and it's like, I know you see me, but,
yeah.
you know, but I just got to do better. And I'm going through the same thing myself, actually, you know. So it's like I'm trying to balance everything out with the communication and the listening part, you know. So it's like, you got to do a little bit of both and let God do his work.
Yeah, and I, you know what's interesting is I've seen guys kind of in this situation, where people that fall away from the faith, right, fall away from Jesus, the catalyst to some of that, like I've seen it be someone who has done something very, very bad, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, world eyes, God's eyes, it's just not right. Like, whatever you did, you sucked. You screwed it up big time, right?
Yeah.
And generally the barrier is one of two things. It is such a deep shame for having treated so poorly someone that you love,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know how to reconcile that, which you can't.
Right.
And the second thing is that, like, it becomes so difficult to believe how much God loves you. Like,
yeah.
it's so weird. It is the mercy of God that becomes the hardest to believe with
yeah.
how hard you are on yourself. And here's the thing. I'm not saying that you don't need to properly recognize the extent of your sin, the damage that it causes, the separation from God. Yeah. Yeah.
It hurts bad.
But here's the thing. It is through that, though, that we understand what Christ has actually done.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, it is flat out unbelievable. It is yeah. not believable that someone could love us to that extent that they would suffer and die for a man who would choose something so temporary, something so foolish, and spit in God's eye in the process, and yeah. then be able to come back and say, I'm sorry. And he says, I give you mercy.
Yeah.
You know what? It becomes something that we cannot digest because we are so far from that, for that mercy in our own lives, not only for other people, often for ourselves. We mm-hmm. cannot believe it coming from a God. Who mm-hmm. who has the ability and the right sight to be justice. Yep. And he looks at this and says, your forgiveness is justice because of what Christ has done. And so this guy had done an interview, and his answers, maybe I'll find a link so you guys can listen to it. I'm not going to go into it. And I hate talking about the guy in the third person. I mean, we're not friends or anything. We don't know each other. I just happened to have listened to his music, and I thought the story was interesting. And I thought, some of the stuff he said in the blog post was just impactful to me.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I his answers otherwise lead you to think that, like, I mean, it's questionable whether he still followed Jesus.
But you know, like, is like you can come across a crossroad like that, but you know, at that moment, you got to think about everything, his mercy that he did on you. You know, like, it's hard to not see the signs when you upset, you know, like
yeah.
that he already did to you, so did for you, I mean. But at the same time, I just had a similar, not the part about I don't believe Jesus, but
right.
I was just going through a rough time yesterday. So I was just basically thinking to a head, worrying about the future. So it's like I had to talk with God. Like, I just talk with God any time of the day. You know, I was
yeah.
just walking from the store, so I'm talking to him like, okay. If you're not mad at me, then make it rain. Then I'm like, no, I ain't gonna ask you that. I thought it, cause I know anything you ask him, he'll do it for you, right? So I thought it, but I didn't see it.
Uh-huh.
Then I told him like, I didn't want it to rain, but I said like, make it thunder. Like, okay, no, I'm not gonna ask for that neither.
Uh-huh.
So I get home, right? Like, my headphones, it didn't work for, like, over a week.
Uh-huh.
And I was watching something like scriptures and, you know, things of that sort.
Yeah.
So I'm like, God, if if you listening right now and you know, like, make the other headphone work for work, basically, you know, to let me know, like, it's you, basically. I mean, like, you gotta ask him to do something, like, basically, to let you know, but it's like, and guess what happened, bro? Like, I swear, like, it was the craziest thing. I was set up because my phone was finna die.
Yeah.
I plugged it in the charger, and, like, I got close to the TV, and then next thing I know, like, I had both headphones on, and then I just started talking loud, like, hey, turn that down, you know, like, I'm thinking it's the TV that, because, you know, I got a smart TV,
yeah,
you know,
right,
so
yeah.
I'm thinking my Bluetooth connected to the TV, but actually, it was my second headphone, my right headphone had came on,
huh.
So I'm like, okay, that's the first sign, right? And then not only did he show me that sign, he guided me to something, like, basically about what I was worried about, right?
Yeah.
Like, because before I even went to the store, I had a conversation with my mom, like basically, like, you know, like, she was just saying, like, you got to worry about, she was saying, like, don't worry about the future, you know, like, you got to think about today, like, you know, today
right.
got his own worries or whatnot.
Right.
So, okay, fast forward, it's just so crazy because he just worked, like, in mysterious ways, so. The headphones come on.
Yeah.
First sign. I get guided to something, the answer to my question that I needed, you know, like that I was asking him about, and you know,
yeah.
he gave me the answer to my question, basically. And then not only that, guess what came on? Like, you know, I got the little app on my phone about the scriptures or whatnot. And,
yeah.
And guess what it said?
What was that?
Trouble is enough. So don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring its own worries. Today's trouble is enough for today. At the very root of worry is fear. Fear of the unknowns or what ifs can erode away the security we find in God. Don't let this fear overtake and allow the worry to creep in your thoughts. Place your confidence in Jesus that he will provide and comfort you. Then pray. So it's like exactly what me and my mom was talking about, the third sign, you know, like, and he just kept, like, he is so off, man. Like, you know, like, when you ask him and you believe in it, man, he get the showing off, bro. So it's like, that's the mercy that I love. And, you know, I always want to feel every day, you know,
yeah.
like, cause I, just before that, I was feeling down, like, exactly what you were explaining.
Yep.
That's why I was running up here. Like, I got to make it up here. Like, you know, I'm late and. I know he up here on fire up here for Jesus, so, you know, like, but,
Interesting. Now, Nick Harris, actually, I don't think I've asked you this before. So, I probably know a good number of guys who would hear you tell that story and be like, I don't know if God does that.
Yeah, you're right, but it's like, it's through signs. Like God can't come to you, like, and with a voice, because, you know, like, you can get deceived by, I don't even want to say his name, but
yeah,
the other
right.
guy, you know, so,
yeah.
but. So he come to you through signs. Like when you ask him things, you believe in it, have your heart open, you basically do the things that, you know, make him happy, and you just wait for the signs. Sit back and watch the clock, you know, and when you do that, you don't take your eye off the clock. Like everything is suspicious now. Cause it's like, I can't go off my understanding. Like when I'm thinking about God, I can't use my own logic or what I'm used to, so, anything that I see is on the radar. Everything is on the radar.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that? Oh, I'm looking at every sign. I'm looking at every sign, you know? So, don't let the world deceive you and make you think like everything is a coincidence, cause it's really not. Sometimes it's God budging you or he's guiding you to do something or, you know, he's helping you out of a situation that you don't even know you're in, you know? So you just gotta always pray when you communicate with him. That's when you look for the signs. You know, you just can't pray for it and then forget you prayed for it.
Yeah.
And then be like, oh, he ain't give it to me, so it ain't going to happen. Like, when you pray for it, you got to keep it on your mind, your heart. Do the things that'll make him happy, and he'll bless you for it. You know, so you just got to keep your heart open. If my mind is closed and my heart's not open, then how can I receive a blessing? Like, that's the same thing. Like, it makes me mad that Jesus was actually here and people didn't respect the things that he did or even give him gratitude, show him gratitude for the
yeah.
things that he did. Like, these guys is seeing him do the things that he is known for doing.
Yeah.
And that's blessing people.
Right.
But yet they turn him down. And guess what? Like, it's even worse because the people where he's from, they didn't even receive the most miracles. Like, if I lived next door to Jesus, I would have been in his house every day. Like, hey, what, where you going? Like, you know, like, I'm just not going to let you just leave my side. Even
yeah,
if
right.
you say, like, you're not ready to be one of the disciples. I'm watching from a distance. Like,
you like, just tell me when.
Yeah.
I'll be 40 feet back.
Yep. Like, this guy keep following us. So, man, let him come. 13. But that's, yeah, I mean, you got to just always keep a positive man and a clear heart. Well, a clear heart and a positive man, basically, you know, so. He always show us signs. You just got to look.
Yeah.
You know, we call them coincidences nowadays. Like, I ask for something and then it happened. It's like, oh, that's a coincidence. What's the odds of that happening? You know, like, instead of saying, thank you, Jesus, I know that was you.
Right.
You know, I just give him his credit every time it's due, big or small, because I know it's his mercy that I'm even woke up today. So, I mean, I got to give him all the glory and all the praise. So.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. I suppose, right, To from our nature of coincidences, it's like we just want to, it's a reasonable thought. That's
yeah.
what reasonable people think.
Yeah,
like,
reasonable.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, God, no, he doesn't either deal on that level or
yeah.
He doesn't really care about that particular thing or he doesn't do that kind of thing anymore. Like, he's
yeah.
suddenly lost his ability to do it. We pretty reasonable. I was like, oh, yeah, it's just a coincidence. Which, interestingly enough, that's the prime argument for how the world's created without God
mm-hmm.
is coincidence.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I've not had those experiences, Nick Harris. But
yeah.
But here's the deal.
Just try it.
I'm not necessarily, but I'm not a guy that says God can't do what he wants. So I'm gonna put that in the I don't know column.
Yeah, look, this is what I'm look. Sometimes I'm not saying test God, but
yeah.
you gotta. That's how you build your relationship up with him. You know, you talk to him and have conversations with him. That's not praying. Like, you don't always have to, you know, be on your knees when you're talking to God. Like, even though I don't want anybody to feel offended or anything like that, but like you just, like the way I talk to him, I pray, I do get on my knees and pray.
Sure.
But like, if I'm on the go outside, I gotta be in full communication with him. Like
right.
if I'm walking down the street, I don't care if somebody's looking at me talking to myself with no headphones.
Yeah.
Cause I'm not talking to myself, like I'm actually talking to the Most High. So it's like, my relationship with him, I always communicate. So every day, it's like somebody right next to me. I could be by myself, and I can just be, you know, like, God, you know, just look out for me and make sure you guide me or whatnot and show me what you want me to do. Show me the signs, which way, what should I do? Like, depending on the situation, whatever I'm about to do,
yeah.
that's what I talk to him about, and that's what he has shown me the signs. Like, you know, it's sort of like, having a boss with you all day, you know, like,
yeah.
hey, boss, what you want me to do? You know, you need some help over there?
you,
or, you know? So it's like, I have no problem with doing that.
Yeah.
So it's like when you, like I said, bro, it's so easy, bro. Like, you just have talk to him, have a little talks with him that only you would know. No, this is the way I really do it because I like when people do this.
Yeah.
So just try it. Like, you got to have a second person, you know, like God always say you got to have another witness, you know, like even though your conscience is going to bear witness, that's between you and your conscience.
Yeah.
But you have to have a physical, you know, that way, like say you and Mike talk to God at the same time, ask him to do something and wait on him to do it. And that way you and Mike will be a witness to exactly what God, you know,
like I've done that multiple times actually, where we have, and it wasn't asking, it was asking for an answer to something.
Yeah.
Whereas to say, like, I don't want to, I'm more interested in what God is really wants done here. And
mm-hmm.
so I have two different people pray on it.
Yeah.
And then I'll be talking to each other and they come back and we say, look, what do you think? What is God telling you?
Right.
Because I would assume God would say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
To multiple parties. And so, like, anytime I've had a couple big decisions in life, and that felt like I've just got guys that I otherwise trust
mm-hmm.
to pray on that, who'll be faithful in praying on that. Yeah, and that's worked, to make sure that, like, it's not something that I'm kind of feeding into it because I want a particular outcome or whatever. It's, you know, if we all praying on it, what are we hearing back from God? And then we'll go from there.
Yeah, and that's how it works, bro. Like, it works like that with every situation, though. Like, that's what I mean. Like, not just big decisions. Like, it
sure.
worked with God. Which way should I go? Like, which restaurant should I go to today? Because he can guide you. Just you asking, what should I eat for lunch,
can guide you to
a whole blessing,
bro.
Are
you sure the Lord cares what you have for lunch?
Definitely.
Oh, he definitely, well, he definitely cares.
Definitely.
Okay.
That's the most important thing that us humans can do is eating. Like, when you eat, people dance and be in the kitchen, dancing, cooking. So, it's like, I mean, that's the most important thing in life is eating. Like, I mean, when you think about it, okay, like, why are we here? To take care of the creatures of the land and grow food. It's us that make things technical. It's us that make things critical. Like, we add on to what God already did, and he don't need anything taken away or added on. Like, that's why technology, the old ancient guys, like, they doing the same thing without the technology that we have today.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, it's people that make things complicated. It's real simple. Like, that's why the Bible, like, is like a story. Like, you know, it's like a bedtime story. Like, you know, it's soft and sweet, but yet it can get nightmarish when your conscience get convicted, when God, when you hear his words, you either run from God or you run towards him, or you run from him when you hear it. Either way, you gonna do one or the other two. So,
yeah,
it's like, man, it's no running away from God, but at the same time, you just got to let them work, you know?
Yeah, no. Here's the deal. Maybe you listen right now and you think to yourself, I don't know about this thing that Nick Harris is saying. But yeah. I tell you what, he's the only guy that I've ever met that I really believe prays without ceasing, for the most part. So, I mean, until you be trying that stuff, I think you maybe put some of that stuff back on the table there, bro. Just something to think about.
I mean, look, this is what I mean. Like, take it in, but do it with two people. You need two people. You need a witness. Because you will sound just like me. Like, I don't have a witness right here, so that's why this situation could have went better if I had somebody else with me that knows exactly what I mean, and that's why God say that it's better to have two people when you do it.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing: it doesn't have much to do with you personally, Nick. It's a, I think it's just a theological belief that says, you know, God gave us a Bible. See, that should be sufficient to otherwise guide our life. Is he really all that invested in some of the things that you're talking about
in
that level of minutia? And the truth is that, like, I actually can't speak too much because, for the most part, I probably fell into that camp, which says I'm not sure that he cares, really. And so be throwing it out.
But look, think of this, though, Ben.
Okay.
Everything is created by God for God. So it don't matter if it's the TV. You can't just say God didn't create the TV. God created the man that created the TV. So he can interact through any device, any system, any places, no place in the world he can't reach you, you know? So you just gotta, when you think about God, think about mighty. Don't use your own understanding, because this world is a spiritual world. Like, it's physical, but it's more spiritual.
Yeah.
You know, so when you think about these things and you understand that, you would understand, like, God work in ways that go way past, like, he really do care, like, the little things. That's what he wants you to do.
That's true. He cares about the birds of the air. See, dang it.
Yeah.
We are stupid rationality. I don't know. I don't know what to do with life. Here's the deal.
Okay.
My first reaction, Nick Harris, would be like, I'm going to put the think on it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not even the right reaction. I'm going to put the think on it. I don't know. All right. Hey, you're listening to Life from the Path. Me and Nick Harris hanging out here. Boy, that took a turn for the better. I'm glad Nick showed up and rescued the show. I was starting to be a dreary Benfest.
It's okay, man. I miss you, man. I miss you.
Yeah, I know, brother. I'm glad that you're here. It really amps up the joint. So, hold on. What else do I have going on around here? So,
we can do this all night if you want.
Hey, actually, we made some progress here. We can do a couple advices, and then we'll be out here.
Okay,
let's
sweet.
See. What do we got? Oh, my. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path.
Oh, okay.
I have a 7-year-old son who seems to be growing up faster than I would like at times. With today's music, video games, TV, and movies, there are some things regarding sex I can't prevent him from seeing or learning if I haven't screened the contents. I realize my son knows more than I would like for a child his age to know. Because of this, my husband thinks it's time to have the birds and the bees talk. I'm not ready to have that talk, and I don't believe my son is at an age to have this talk either. My husband is a psych major who never fails to remind me how knowledgeable he thinks he is as he tries to convince me that our son is ready.
Okay.
I know that one day my son will be curious about his body, but is now that time? Am I wrong in thinking he's too young? Wait, 7? What do you think, Nick Harris?
I mean, mom's going to be mom. She's going to protect her baby or whatnot. But, you know, dad, he probably looking at it like, you know, that's around the time where you start going to school. Because I know my daughter is like 7 right now. Yeah. So she's like in first grade. And yeah, it can be tough with the kids. You know, like you got to let them know about what's going on out in the world, but in a kid way.
You know, right.
It's all about how you present it rather than what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, because you can, he can be aware on what's going on, but he don't have to give in to what's going on around him based on he see the good role models at home.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, no matter what, that's what made God so good, because when you grow your kids up to know about God and learn about God, no matter what happens in the world, no matter what foolish they do in the world, they always come back to God. I'm a plain example. You know, like, I did all type of crazy stuff and, you know, like, went the wrong path. And, you know, God, like, once you really for God, can't nothing snatch you away from God, you know. So you just pray on it, you know, ask God what you should do. But basically, like, you probably do need to have that talk with him, because, like, when you go to school, is kids at school that don't have the same morals as you. So, you
right.
know, like, you don't want them to learn from school, from somebody at school, because they can come home and not tell you what's going on. Like,
yeah.
you know, like, you got to, they got to hear it from you first as a parent. So, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Well, I don't know. Some of it might be what you say.
No, I mean, yeah, it's what you say. You definitely got to watch what you say, but,
yeah.
you know, you got to present it to them, because, like, 7 is too close to 10. 10 too close to 13.
And 13 too close to 60. I see what you're getting at.
Yeah, so, time goes by fast, bro. Like, first grade, and before you know it, man.
I would agree. That stuff comes up fast.
Yeah.
And I think... I don't know. I probably overdo it. Like, I'm generally willing to expose my kids to things to have so that I can have conversations with them.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't shelter them from a lot of different things. Like, let me put this differently. I don't intentionally expose them to, like, I don't know, a making out scene on the TV or something.
No.
That's not what I'm talking about. But what I'm saying is that, like, Even when they were younger, like, there's just not a lot of things that I won't talk about. It just depends on how you're going to say it. Like, for example, we were talking about, we were in church over the last, probably last month, mm-hmm. the story of, where I was talking about the story of Joseph. And we do, everybody's adults and kids are in the same room, right?
Okay.
And so, like, you run into this story with Joseph and Potiphar and Potiphar's wife. And
mm-hmm.
Potiphar's wife, like, the way the Bible describes it, like, is going to bring up questions, because we've got kids that are sitting there that are range from like 6 months to, you know, 16,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, you know, reasonably the 4-year-old and the 6-year-old and the 9-year-old, everybody's going to have questions about this. And so,
right.
like, I'm not going to skip that story because there's a relevance to it. But, like, the mm-hmm. way I explained adultery was, is that Potiphar's wife was trying to treat Joseph as her husband
right.
when he wasn't her husband.
Right.
Okay. Because there's a number of things that bake into that. There's sexual things that bake into that, which, frankly, the older people, like adults and the older kids, are going to know that already.
Yeah.
And the truth is that, frankly, I think that's a better working definition of our understanding of adultery anyway. Are
yeah.
you interacting with someone and treating them as your spouse, or in ways that you would only supposed to treat your spouse? Are you treating them? And, you know, maybe that's holding hands in the movie theater or sharing secrets that don't belong to them. Like,
right.
whatever it is. I think that's fine to classify as something that you shouldn't be up to.
Right.
And so, you know, what's one of the things I've talked about with my kids, and I remember one being like 5 and 7, about 7, and we were talking about a similar story, and I said, look, you know, when you're married to someone, you're married to that one person. You don't get to treat other people as if you're married to them. And that includes, how you touch each other. Like, you don't be hugging and kissing and things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not your... If you're not married to that person, then that's not something that you get to do. Now, here's the thing, is that, like, that distinction will start to evolve.
Yeah.
And the amount of detail that is necessary or that they're inquisitive about will change as they get older. But, like, there just isn't very much that I can't say. What was else I was trying to describe to the kids? This is trying to teach Bible in a group where the kids and adults are in the same room is tricky. Oh, circumcision. Good night, Nick Harris.
Right.
You know, 4 and 5-year-olds in there. I'm like, well,
Right.
Here's what they've done. I think I likened it to an ear piercing, except for on a man's penis.
And right.
I said, look, they're cutting skin. Right. But here's the thing. It's like, I don't, you know, they think that's odd. But like, if I don't load a bunch of mystery into it, then they don't start trying to solve mysteries outside of that. They know I'm going to tell them. Like, you ask me a question, I'll give you an answer.
Right.
To the extent that the detail, frankly, if you keep asking detailed questions, I'll keep providing you detailed answers.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm not exposing you something so that you may think dirty or wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you true things.
Right.
And I believe that truth is helpful. So, like, I get that that's difficult. I get that you might think that, hey, if I introduce this concept, am I poisoning their mind? I mean, yeah, if you start showing them pornography to try to teach them as a 7-year-old, that's going to be a mistake. But, like, if you're otherwise introducing that people have special relationships, that those are supposed to be happening within marriage, that some of the things that they might come across on TV or a magazine, like, hey, some images don't belong to them. Like, anybody who don't have any clothes on, that's not for them, right? That, like, right. That's not, that you don't have to go in full on how are birds and bees made. All we're saying is that, like, know the things that they might be exposed to, head them off at the pass and say, look, that stuff's not for you. You see someone looking at that, that's, you know, don't do that.
Right.
And then come to me with questions so that when they run into things that they have questions about, or when they start to feel a certain way about somebody or whatever it is, that they come to you and they trust that you're going to tell them as opposed to, like, shielding them and hiding them so they got to get it elsewhere. I think that's beneficial. And, mm-hmm. again, I've been accused of overdoing it. So, like, I'll grant that I might be on the extreme side of this thing. But, like, you know, I just
you just want to be the messenger.
Yeah, I'd rather just tell them. I'd rather just tell them and give them the right way to think about things,
mm-hmm.
so that as they grow up, they have the context to digest things that I obviously can't touch everything, right? Like,
right.
Some yahoo's going to come talking to them or trying to show them some sort of circumstance that we haven't discussed because it's gross or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they just need a framework to work from. Be like, you know what? That sounds like a way people treat spouses, and we ain't married. So, you know mm-hmm. what, Frederick? I don't think so.
Right.
We ain't doing that stuff. So, so I think that's, but me and Nick Harris are both in with, you just need to talk to him. Let's see what, Secular says. I don't know your son, how much adult material he has been exposed to, or how mature he is for his age, but I believe the birds and bees talk should be an ongoing dialogue rather than one speech. Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Children should know the correct terms for their body parts and what private means so they can communicate effectively. I don't think it's harmful for children to know where puppies, kittens, and baby birds come from. In another conversation, they should know what pregnant means. Your son should also know that if he has any questions, he can come to you and his father and get straight answers. The question, how does the baby get there, will probably come in another year or two. And when mm-hmm. it is asked, he should be answered in a straightforward manner. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you got to tell that stuff. All right. Here we go. Let's do this last one. Dear Life from the Path, it has been 2 years, and I haven't been able to get over my first love. I just graduated from high school, and I'll soon be 18. But I still can't get used to the idea that he's gone. When we broke up, he made me feel like dirt. We had been a couple since my freshman year, and he dumped me at the beginning of my junior year because I didn't want to give him my virginity. Oh, boy. Hmm. Later, I discovered he had been cheating on me with my best friend. Please help.
It sounds like you dodged the bullet.
Yeah, right on, man.
You know, thank God for that, you know, because that guy wasn't good for you. God forbid that he got you pregnant, you know, if things turned another way, you know, so you don't want to make long relationships with people that should be only short term. So I think God bless you that time, and, you know, just pray that, you know, God just take that guy off your mind for the moment, you know. Because, I mean, of course, we do got people that, you know, things that we attached to that we shouldn't. So it just don't seem like he was right for you from the start. So
yeah, no, I agree. And, like, I've noticed this this is not to denigrate that circumstance, but, like, I've noticed this a lot in my kids too, is that, like, I got a house for girls, Nick Harris, ladies right. everywhere, right? It's testosterone, me, and then everybody else, estrogen factory.
Right.
So, like, but, like, they spend a lot of time being upset about things that, like, that aren't, like, true things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not real things. Like in this example, she's like, it was my first love. Like, if she has this impression that, hey, you know, we were going to be together forever, and I'm real disappointed. But, like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Like, that was the lie. Like, the truth has been revealed to you,
mm-hmm.
and you're holding on to the emotional highness of a false thing. Right. Like, you weren't ever going to spend eternity with him. That was the wrong thing. You are blessed to have been corrected.
Right.
And I was trying to think of my kids' examples. So, like, they'll be like, maybe one of them comes home and is like, hey, you know, I was going to play the iPad. I thought I'd be able to play the iPad. I'm like, no, we were never going to allow that. And they're, like, really upset about it. I'm like, yeah. I don't know what you're upset about, man. Like, you thought of something that was actually never true at all.
Yeah.
And then you're upset that it wasn't true.
Yeah.
Like, that's not my fault, man. You got to stop believing wrong things.
Yeah.
You know, solve that. You start asking questions.
Yeah.
That's how you solve those types of things. But, like, you know, I got ladies in the house, and they're constantly upset about something that wasn't true to begin with.
Yeah.
But they had it in their mind that was true. And so I get where she's coming from, and that is very difficult to deal with. The guy's obviously done you wrong, and it stinks to be treated that way.
Yeah,
like, that sucks when people treat you like that.
Yeah.
But, like, the reality is, and we have to deal with true things. It's how the world actually works.
Mm-hmm.
As we look at your circumstance and say, look, I miss this man, but, like, I shouldn't because he doesn't miss me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to marry a guy who would, A, break up with me because I wouldn't give my virginity to him. And because he wasn't getting what he wanted out of me, he took it from another girl who he wasn't committed to at the time, my best friend to boot. Nick Harris is dead on. You dodged a bullet here.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that you feel the way that you feel, but, like, we might as well deal in some true things. And, like, truthfully, this guy wasn't for you.
Yeah.
He knows that because he took steps to prove it. You now know that because of his reaction. It's been, what'd she say? It's been 2 years since then?
How old is he, though?
I just graduated from high school, and I'll soon be 18. I still can't use... So she broke...
Oh, yeah, she's still young. So you still got time to grow, baby. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
You still got time to grow. You'll meet somebody that really care about you and understand that patience is virtue, and, you know, you don't... That's not something to jump into, you know, so...
Yeah.
Just stay patient, and God will bless you.
And that, I suppose that's the thing. It's like, this isn't just people saying things like that to you to make you feel good or to ease your pain. Like, that is the truth. That is the dead truth. Like, anything that isn't that is a falsity. Anything that says, oh, you know what, maybe you'll get back together. Maybe you should get back together. Oh, you really missed out. Like, none of that stuff is even close to true.
No.
It's not true. That stinks that your junior and senior year were tainted by some turd washer who treats you like junk. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but, like, yeah, don't let another second go by wasting it thinking about that guy.
Yeah.
The reality is that you were never going to be together forever. He just knew that before you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Secular says, why did you allow him to make you feel like dirt? Be glad you didn't have sex with him. If you had, he probably would have cheated on you anyway. You have your whole life ahead of you. Please don't waste one more second of it looking over your shoulder. Hey,
just
all
like
that.
You said.
That's right. And pining for someone who would punish you for hanging on to your values. You did the right thing, and you should have no regrets.
None at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, man. That's, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I really. Yeah, I hate the thought that you had to go through that. That's a real bummer. All right, hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. Hey, you know what? Actually,
going on this week, what you got going on?
Hey, that's a good thought, actually, Nick Harris. So we do have a guest in next week. I think it's a guy that runs an organization that helps Haiti. They just opened a thrift store here in Grimes, and I was in there, and, like, they just got a lot of cool things going on in there. So I'm really interested to talk to him and to see how the thrift store stuff's going. They do, like, a fro-yo. They travel back and forth to Haiti, and he can give us an update on how Haiti's doing after that Matthew had gone through there, what it's like to rebuild in that country that was, frankly, in the process of building anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so... And see what the God's doing. He said he's got some pretty cool gospel stories from Haiti, too. So we'll catch up with that next week. And then the week after, Chris Akers is going to be in. His new album's out, I think, this week. He's waiting to confirm that. Go hook up with him on Facebook. Look for Chris Akers Music or Christopher Akers. And you can get the updates on that. But, like, he's got a new album out, so we're going to have him in and hear some tunes from him and see what's going on in his life. So lots of cool stuff going on.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was going to say. Hey, so for those guys that do listen to the show... like, I was on the fence, really. I was going to cancel the show, really, because everyone else was going to be gone. So, you know, maybe if you want to hit me up with some feedback, and usually I'll just dismiss it, whether you say good or bad. But I'm actually pretty interested as to whether this is worth your time.
It definitely is.
Well, Nick Harris, you say that because you showed up. Maybe the me and Nick Harris portion. But just shoot me an email, maybe. infolifeinthepath.org. Hook us up on Twitter, Facebook, or whatever. Just let me know. If it sucks, that's okay. Just say that. And then I'll know better, and I'll cancel the thing next time if it's just me sitting here by myself. But if this had any value to you whatsoever, let me know that too, and then we can figure out the right way to handle that going forward. All right. We will see you next week. In the meantime, please be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Life from the Path.